Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey Blenders, it's Sean O'Connell, and we do not have a traditional show this week. The guys are taking some well-deserved time off for the holidays, but this is a huge week at the movies with so many things dropping, and one film in particular that we wanted to put on your guys' radars is Promising Young Woman, which people have been talking about since the Sundance Film Festival way back in January, early this year. And a lot of times films will build up some buzz at that fest and then figure out the right time for them to drop and hit the most, the largest audience possible. Obviously, Promising Young Woman sort of ran into the buzzsaw that was COVID and no theaters being around, but it's finally coming out and people get a chance to see it. And I kind of want you guys to go into it knowing as little as possible. It's got some amazing surprises and a tremendous lead performance by Carey Mulligan. Boy, what can I even say? It's interesting because in this conversation with director Emerald Fennell, who was nice enough to come by and be a guest on the show, we do sort of dance around spoilers. We talk about how difficult it is for her to even do interviews on behalf of Promising Young Woman because anything that she sort of says about it is a potential spoiler. But even if you kind of know the setup of the film, it doesn't really ruin at all the impact that it has throughout the course of the sort of dark comedic journey that Carey Mulligan's character goes on. We even do get into the fact in this interview that the Golden Globes is putting Promising Young Woman up for the comedy musical category. There are no musical numbers in this movie, but the music is a pretty significant part of the film, and that's another conversation that we talk about. So I think, without a doubt, if you like our show and if you like the type of filmmaking that we usually celebrate, you're absolutely going to dial into Promising Young Woman, and I cannot wait for you guys to hear our interview right now with the writer-director of that film, Emerald Fennell. I'm kind of bummed that I missed this at Sundance because by the time it got around to me, I a little bit knew what to expect from the story. And so I want you to tell me about the first time that you got to hear Carrie's line reading in front of an audience of where she says with clarity, I said, what are you doing? Like, tell me about that impact.
Well, the first time I heard it was at a test screening in Burbank. And it was amazing. You know, it was amazing because I think, excuse me, that's the problem with this year, I guess, making movies this year, and suddenly movie theaters being shut. That experience, I think, that we're all so, that we love and that is so important of having other people around you, other people laughing, other people gasping, other people, you know, other people's reactions is such a crucial part of any movie. So, yeah, it was wonderful. It was just so exciting when people suddenly realized. And actually, you know, throughout the movie, actually, there was a lot of that. We had a fight. We had a ton of stuff happen in the audience at the test screening in Burbank.
There was a fight in your audience?
There was a fight. There's a scene in the movie that's quite, you know, one of the more intense scenes. And yeah, a fight broke out. Somebody didn't like it. The other person did, you know, the person who did like it was saying like, if you don't like it, you can leave, don't ruin it for everyone. You know, there was just like a whole thing happening. And I decided to sit right at the back because I was sort of, you know, so I don't want to sit with all of the producers and the distributors. I want to really experience it at the back. And then the moment I sat down between two people and, you know, the person next to me was like, oh, what is this? What is this again? And the other guy was like, I don't know.
Oh. How horrible. I can't imagine how horrifying
anyway,
that is.
Then, you know, it started and luckily people were, you know, responding really well. And then, but I was super aware that the distributors and all the producers, everyone who'd like financed it was there. And I thought, oh, this isn't great to have people scream at each other over your movie, but you know, I guess it's good to have a reaction.
It is, absolutely. I also find it's fascinating, too, because you talk about reactions. I thought that the screenplay does a really deliberate job of protecting Cassie and some of her truths. And the way that you decide to peel back and let us learn more about her. Can you talk a bit just about how you approached, how much of about her you wanted us to know? Because I thought, in a way, your approach kept us off balance. I didn't really know how much I could trust from any of the characters that I was seeing on screen for a while into the film.
Yeah, well, I think for me, you know, a really good thriller plot is as it's as much as what you leave out and as what you put in. And I think that certainly that's the wonder of movies, is you've got a finite amount of time.
Right.
And you know what you can put in, you know what you can leave out. And yes, it, for me, certainly writing it, it was very purposeful that we weren't entirely sure what the motivations are, what has, you know, all of the thing we learn in every scene, you sort of learn something new. Obviously, it's kind of a weird time now talking about it, because necessarily you have to explain the movie to some degree.
Sure.
And, you know, anything you explain about this movie, unfortunately, kind of like undercuts that. But yes, I think it was really important. And it's really important that Cassie, you know, doesn't always know what she's doing. Mm-hmm. Like, she's meticulous and she's obsessive and she's, you know, she's careful up to a point, but she also knows, particularly when things get more personal and closer to her, that she does, like most addicts or people who are involved in kind of traumatic self-harming cycles, I think she knows the closer she gets to it, the more out of control she becomes.
I've been doing junkets for a very long time, almost 20 years at this point. And I love when an actor does this on screen, because I love to pick their brain about how they approach it. And I hope you take this seriously, because I think the act of acting drunk on screen is really difficult. Because when it's wrong, it's an immediate eyesore that takes you completely out of the movie.
Sure.
And for your movie, it's integral. So
yeah.
As an actor and as a director, can you please just talk about that process?
Well, firstly, I'm incredibly lucky because, you know, Carey Mulligan plays Cassie in this movie, and she's just a genius.
Yeah.
She's one of those very rare people that's perfect, who's does something magic. So I was never worried in that department, but I know that Carey, not necessarily realizing that she's a genius, was kind of anxious about it. But what I said, and I'm not giving it away because obviously it's in the trailer.
Yeah.
But she's not actually drunk.
Right.
So that gives, I think as a performer, that gives you a lot of freedom, because actually if it isn't perfect, which it was, but if it hadn't have been, it wouldn't have mattered so much, because actually Cassie herself is not a professional actress.
That's
she's just
fascinating.
Doing this thing. So it kind of made it, you know, it made it easier, I think. And that's, for me, such an important thing about about directing, and something that I felt very strongly about, was that, you know, you really got to make people feel comfortable, find those ways of, like, it's so nerve-wracking. You know, and what actors do, you know, they have a tenth of the time that every other department has.
Right.
And the thing that they do is the last thing, and the thing that gets the most scrutiny at the end. So I'm kind of aware that, for me, part of it, especially with scenes like that, is that you feel kind of very free. But luckily, yeah, Carey's a genius and Cassie's not really drunk.
I didn't even think about the fact that you have an actress playing a character who's pretending. that other level is a safety net.
Yeah, and that's so fun because, you know, depending on what the audience knows, you then can play with the moments of, you know, behind the act too, the moments that scene partners turn away, that you're able to slip, you know, all of that stuff is so fun. And, you know, it just gives you such an opportunity to sort of, yeah, so that suddenly, you know, the audience, something that had been surprising to them is now something they're in on.
I'm so glad you mentioned her scene partners, because I wanted to go down that route as well, too, because with each passing scene, and it's not giving anything away, we get yet another brilliant character actor who Carey gets to play off of. I'm sure you look at it as just a complete, you know, embarrassment of riches. You're a cast, but please talk to me about just recruiting them and how you felt being able to get these people to really fill in the gaps and the cracks of these scenes.
I mean, it was unbelievable. I think the thing is about making a film, like certainly making your first film and an independent movie, I think because Focus are on board and they're incredible. People think of it as a studio movie, but it's very much an independent movie with an independent budget that we shot in 23 days. So, you know, it was one of those movies that like we managed to kind of get it in the can because every single person who worked on it was just amazing. But so kind of knowing that, I think when I was writing it, I knew that partly I would have to be, you know, I would have to be aware of what we would be able to do, how we could add value, you know, how you could do things like that. And I think what I love about road movies, what I love about, you know, any kind of almost Western where people are kind of on a journey and they meet people along the way, or an allegory, all of those sorts of things, is you can ask someone that you never think in a million years could, you know, would, to come in for a day. And because we shot in Los Angeles, you know, for lots of reasons, actually, we shot Los Angeles just as a generic, you know, just any American city, but we shot there partly because we had such short prep time that when we were there already and I was very pregnant. So I think everyone was worried about flying me anywhere, rightly. And so we were there. And so, you know, it was a different situation because then you say, look, it's next door, we'll pick you up, you know, and you get to act with Carey, one of the greats. And, you know, and so you hope that the parts are tantalizing enough that people want to do it. And Carey's so good. And yeah, it was unbelievable because, you know, we had a dream list and everyone on it is in the movie. Really.
Did you write with people in mind?
No, I didn't. I'm not very good at that. I think sometimes it can be a bit inhibiting, but I definitely knew that I wanted the people that Cassie encounters to be people that we really trust and really like and really respect and have crushes on and feel familiar with, because, you know, this is a movie about good people doing really bad things.
Right.
And so you need to stretch the audience's allegiances. You need to kind of start everyone off at a place of sort of comfort and complicity. So really to do that, you want the guys in this movie to be crushable and funny and, you know, nice seeming.
Right. 23 days is ridiculous. I can't believe I can't believe that's a reality. You will, you know, you're never going to get a chance to have the first day on your first feature again. Were you able to be precious about, this is what I'm going to film on my first day, this is what I'm saving for my last? Or did you, was everything just when you could?
No, luckily I just had the most brilliant first and brilliant kind of amazing producers who knew kind of what I knew, which was that as chronologically as we could shoot it, it would be best.
Okay.
So loosely we shot the end at the end and then, you know, and then, but that was the kind of priority. But no, absolutely. As you say, it's just like, it was however we could do it. Mm-hmm. And it had this kind of double knife edge because obviously the movie is pretty much a different location sometimes too every day. So then you have that kind of added horror. If you drop anything, it's finished. You can't go back. You've got the actors. But, you know, I like that stuff.
Okay.
There's something very thrilling to me about that. There's something about, there's a pleasure in getting stuff done.
Okay.
And I kind of like, I think that often that takes a back seat for a lot of people, but actually you've got to make it. It's all very well to have the, you know, vision and everything, but you really need to practically do it. And for me, that's just a ton of planning, obsessive planning, detailed planning, to the point where I drove pretty much the head of every department, probably quite mad. And also working with the best people in the world who totally are on board. It was amazing.
Do you think your experience in television helps with that too? Because TV seems to work at a quicker pace.
I think certainly acting in TV helped. The thing about, because I was the head writer on Killing Eve season 2, and because it's an American show, but but made in Britain. It's much more of a British setup. So you don't really have a traditional showrunner that who's kind of on set in the same way as you have here. It's mostly a writing job.
Okay.
So really on Killing Eve, even though it was unbelievably thrilling and I was EPing it and kind of over the whole thing, I was very rarely on set. So it wasn't that part of things wasn't, you know, it didn't, wasn't too useful. But being on Call the Midwife as an actress, so I was in a TV series in the UK for 4 years, an amazing TV BBC series.
Oh, you don't have to tell me. My wife is a huge fan.
Huge fan. It's the best ever. And what was so wonderful about it was that everyone who works on it is so lovely. It's such a family. But what you get is you get a different director, a different DP every block. And all of them are amazing, but because you've got the same crew, because you've got the same cast mostly, you kind of start to see what works, what doesn't work so well, what saves time, what loses time. You know, if you're paying attention, that is like the biggest learning, because on-set experience is really difficult to get.
Right.
So that for me was the most useful thing. And then working with people like Joe Wright and, you know, all of those kind of directors and getting to see how they work was helpful too.
Joe Wright's a genius.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's sort of, he just, and the way that he works was so inspiring because, I mean, it wasn't something, sadly, we were able to do on this movie because we just didn't have time. But, like, you know, a really intense rehearsal process where everyone gets to know each other very well. Like, I'm barely in his movies. I have, like, a couple of lines. But he makes sure everyone is kind of, yeah, his eye for detail is very, very particular. And that's wonderful to watch because there's a way of, you know, it's good to see that people can do that without being megalomaniacal.
Right.
Or, you know, I mean, I think I probably occasionally did veer into the megalomaniac because, again, it's that sort of there's a sort of head girl, head mistressy sort of thing that, you know, part of your job inevitably is chivying everyone along.
Yeah.
And ticking them off, mostly Carrie when they're giggling too much at Jennifer Coolidge's brilliant jokes.
So did you listen to the Tom Cruise audio recently and you were like, I get that.
I haven't listened to it yet. Do you know what? I totally agree with the root of it, which is that people should be so responsible at work.
Yeah.
But I haven't listened to it because I'm terrified of being shouted at.
Oh, really?
I know he's not shouting at me. And that's pathetic, but genuinely, like, if I hear or see anyone shouting at someone, it just makes me want to burst into tears. So I can't listen.
No, it'll be too much. It'll be too much for you. I would like to talk about something that I found to be really difficult of a balance, and I'm curious how you approach as a filmmaker. The camera can very easily fetishize a leading lady. And there were a lot of really strong moments when you needed it to get an intimate shot, but not overly fetishize Cassie. Can you just talk about your approach to that?
Totally. Well, I think the thing is that I suppose so much of Cassie's sort of persona in her day-to-day life, as well as her evening pursuits, but mostly during the day, she does use her appearance to subvert and hide in plain sight, and it stops people asking too many questions, stops her appearing kind of, it gives the appearance of functioning. So part of filming her obviously has to include that she is beautiful and she does dress in a sort of hyper feminine way to weirdly to kind of hide. So it is sort of so you're kind of necessarily having to film that. But when it came to anything intimate or there's a scene where there are a couple of scenes where you have to see her knickers, panties, as they say in America, which truly I believe to be one of the perviest words ever. In America, but somehow
there's no way to use it in conversation casually without it just sounding you're a creep.
Especially with an English accent, you definitely sound like a pervert. But so there are a couple of things you see her knickers, her underwear, and you know, so it was just it's everything that you expect. It's like keeping far away. You know, we don't need to be close for that. Making sure nobody is there, and you know, kind of things like there's a moment where she has to take her clothes off and we don't look at it. We turn away because I'm not really interested. Look, here's the thing about women taking their clothes off. It's lovely to watch women take their clothes off because women are lovely and, you know, that's fine. But I think the truth of it is it you don't learn anything. It's not useful, and it's certainly not useful in this film. And I think that, you know, there are very rare moments where you need to see, like, nudity or people's bodies. And actually, for me, I often find it really, like, takes me out of something, and I can't help but think of the actors doing it. So for me, that moment was about, well, what does it feel like to take your clothes off in front of men you don't know? What does it feel like? You know, what are they feeling? I want to see the kind of, you know, for this scene, we used a phantom because I wanted to go into kind of really poor detail, like, I'm sorry, by poor, I mean P-O-R-E. Mm. Wanted to get in their pores, down the throat, you know, the erections, the teeth, the eyes, the kind of red face, like that's the stuff, because that's not what you see. You know, when you watch women taking their clothes off in movies, that's all you're seeing. But I'm not really interested in that.
Right.
I just want to see what their experience
is. It didn't serve that the story at all, in the least bit. That's why I had to assume it was kind of difficult to balance.
Yeah. Well, and I think actually, you know, what's good in this film is I hope, well, one of the things that was important to me, at least, is you very rarely see anything. Mm-hmm. With any, you know, it's difficult to describe without it being in a spoilery way, but things happen. A lot of things happen. But I don't think it's necessary at all to see, particularly, you know, there are some things I just definitely don't want to see. And there was an incident in the movie that I definitely didn't.
No. To this end, can I get your take on the fact that your film has been submitted to the Golden Globes in the comedy and musical category?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a really interesting one. People keep asking me about it, but, you know, I don't have an answer because I have always described Promising Young Woman to people as a dark comedy.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's as much a dark comedy to me as it is a thriller, as it is a kind of meditation on trauma, or, you know, I suppose whatever slightly more grandiose term you use it. I think it's really interesting because obviously this has been a conversation that maybe I wasn't expecting, and so I've been thinking about it a lot. And I think that we still think of comedy, the word comedy, we still have this idea that it's glib or light,
sure,
or maybe that comedy can't, but for me, the only way I've ever been able to communicate the things that I find really difficult and troubling is with humor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know is the answer. I think that the good thing is I'm sure the HFPA will kind of decide what they think is right. And I feel, I mean, I'm basically just delighted to have been submitted. I don't know. I really don't know. I really do think it is at least, you know, at least in big part a comedy.
I think anything that keeps the film in the conversation as we go through, you know, the grind of the awards season is good for you.
Well, yes, but I also think that when we watch it with an audience, the predominant response is laughter.
Okay.
One of the most, you know, that for me, the gears of this is it's, you know, if it's tension and release, it's always the tension of the drama and then the release of the comedy.
Right.
So they're kind of equal to me.
Right. I will get you out of here on this last one, because thanks to your film, I was singing Britney Spears' Toxic for about a week afterwards. So just... Sound choices, you know, soundtrack choices can be so integral to the success of a film. Obviously, growing up in the 80s, I know so many movie soundtracks. I would assume that you have a lot of them as well, too. What was the importance of picking the right songs, and what are some of the songs that you had to fight really hard in order to get?
Well, I was really lucky because, again, I just worked with a team of completely wonderful, supportive people at Capitol Records and Sue Jacobs, who, again, like, I was just punching well above my weight. Sue Jacobs is the best music supervisor in the world. I knew I wanted, there were things in the movie that were in the script that were on the playlist that I listened to a lot and sent to people. Boys, rather, by Charlie XCX. As an opening to the movie seemed to be perfect because it has everything that I like. It's sort of, it's bubblegummy and poppy with this sort of thing. The thing that Charlie XCX does so well is a slightly uneasy kind of razor blade underneath. And you know, the first thing you hear in this movie is the other lyrics, "I was busy thinking about boys."
Yeah.
Naturally, that's what the movie is. I was busy thinking about boys. And it's the same with, you know, It's Raining Men. You look at It's Raining Men and it's just a banger that everyone's used to, but imagine what it would be like if it was Raining Men.
Right.
It's got this kind of violent, you sort of listen to it in a different way. That's what I love. It's, you know, again, Something Wonderful from The King and I, the most romantic song ever written about a man who is incredibly cruel to his woman who loves him, but occasionally does something wonderful.
Right. Yeah, it fits the tone. Emeril, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate being able to talk about this fantastic movie with you.
Thank you very, very much. Lovely talking to you.
We would love to thank Emeril Fennell for being a guest on the show. Phenomenal interview, a really talented filmmaker. We cannot wait to track the progress of her career here on Real Blend, because I assume she's going to be up to some amazing things coming up. And speaking of amazing filmmakers that we were lucky enough to have on the show, we do not have a full show this week. We'll be back next week with brand new episodes. But if you want to go back and listen to some of our most recent ones from December in particular, Patty Jenkins joined the show to talk about Wonder Woman 1984. That movie is going to be in select theaters and on HBO Max on Christmas Day. And of course, Paul Greengrass is bringing Tom Hanks and The News of the World to theaters where possible. So if you want to go out and see a big screen Western and theaters are open near you and you feel safe going to do so, please go check out News of the World and then go back and listen to our interview with Paul Greengrass. In our upcoming episode, we're going to go through our top 10s on the year, and we will have Pete Docter from Pixar's Soul. So some really cool things to look forward to and some interesting interviews to go back and listen to. Plenty of Real Blend content.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the Blender family.